Rasvia Tovarich, welcome back to NASA / Star City Vending Machine. My name is Dan Morin. I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Stell, for the show where we're recapping Star City, the spinoff of For All Mankind.
Spasiba, Dan. Spasiba. It's great to be here back in the USSR. As they say,
that'd be a good song. That'd be catchy.
And it was, yeah, somebody should do that, like in a Beach Boys style. Very exciting, because we are going to be talking about episode 3 of Star City, Bad Dancer, because since we recorded our last two episodes and said that they didn't seem to have episode titles, titles were added to the Screener app. So sorry, everybody.
Yay.
Those old episodes are titled in your feed, but we acted like we didn't know the titles because we didn't know them, but now we know them. Bad Dancer, episode 3.
I'm just, honestly, the only thing that gets me a little bit with the, and this is sometimes in the screener, sometimes not, there's no subtitles in any of these, so I can't, or captions or anything, so I can't, like, I miss stuff and I rewind stuff a couple times, like, I'm gonna have to go with my best guess here.
And there's a moment in this episode where we're gonna have to play the game, screener issue or in the show.
Yep. Sure. Boy, I had some questions. That'll be interesting to find out. Well, all right, let's get into it.
It is 1970.
The year is 1970.
It's 1970, a very, Dan, I have to say it, really excellent year.
It's a great, good year.
It is the year of my birth, so yes.
Well, hopefully, unlike Tanya,
I was not in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, you didn't have to go get your contraband music, which is on X-rays.
Yeah,
because apparently they're using. This has to do, I guess, with the smuggling to get stuff in and out of Star City. Like the stuff. This is basically Western music that they have used the X-rays, because the X-rays are presumably made of plastic.
They're
of
like
some
an
kind.
Acetate of some kind. Yeah, this
is, and can be etched.
You used to be able to do this. So this is a real thing. When I was a kid, you would sometimes get in a magazine or newspaper.
Yeah. I remember those.
Like a square thing that was not a record, right? But it played on a record player like a record, but it was made of flimsy material. And so what we see here with Tanya is she marks down how many times
how
she's played
times.
It because it only plays a certain number of times.
Right, because the needle just wears it out.
Yeah, because it's cheap. It's cheap acetate or whatever. It's an X-ray. I think it's a legitimate X-ray being reused.
Right, repurposed. Yes.
For this.
How else
purpose.
Are they going to get it?
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. I mean, I thought it was kind of a clever and interesting little element of this story. And so we've seen Tanya a bit in the first couple episodes, but we haven't gotten much about her other than she is, you know, she's married to Valya. She's dissatisfied. She was having an affair with Sasha. She seems to generally just be not very happy. And so we get a little bit more of a peek into her life here. She's got this music. She's, you know, playing it in her room while she's the only one home, and she's dancing around and everything. And we learn that, of course, Irina has been assigned to listen to her, and she kind of covers for her, right?
Yeah.
She says she's listening to a Russian folk song.
When she's actually listening, she's come undone by the Guess Who from 1969. So kind of, you know, kind of fits.
Yep, timely.
And I like we continue to have this toggle between Irina transcribing what is occurring and the actual scene where it's occurring. I like that.
Right. Yeah. Valya comes home. He's kind of upset. He's looking for his stopwatch.
Yeah.
And he's arguing with Tanya about basically being here, and there's, you know, nothing for her to do. She's unhappy and all this, and he does not really care.
He is
preoccupied. And that is because he is helping train Sasha and the rest of the crew heading up to the moon to land and do the moon base.
I mean, good news. He's being a jerk to them, too.
Yep. He's a jerk to everybody for reasons that I think will become apparent later on in the episode.
Yeah.
They have a fun argument at one point where Sasha keeps messing stuff up, basically, and Valya is giving him a hard time for, like, you know, screwing up the procedures and all of that. And they have a confrontation, and Sasha points out that he's the better pilot.
Yeah.
He's the better pilot in the Air Force. He's like, are you going to fly a MiG to the moon?
Mm. It's about discipline. He says, don't be a child.
Don't be a child, yes.
But then he does apologize and say the
he
stress.
He does apologize, and they have an awkward conversation where relationships with women, and Sasha says, I've got this move I do whenever, like, I want to.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, and You know, Volley's like, oh, I don't want to hear about it. No, well, kind of, you should tell me about it.
Yeah, it what I like about it is like, well, you know, I could give you some advice of what I do to, you know, have better relationships with the women in my life. And it's like, he's going to give relationship advice. He says, well, what you do is you flip them over. And he's like, stop.
Nope.
Just stop. I do not need, as my notes say, sex position advice from Sasha. But then he's like, or maybe tell me. Actually, why don't you maybe
actually,
tell me
maybe
that?
Maybe I need that. Yeah.
Maybe I do need that.
Meanwhile the chief is off talking to a designer.
It's a great
of
day,
submarines.
Comrades. It's rush time for Soviet submarines, comrades.
This is finally the Hunt for Red October prequel that we always wanted.
We all asked for, yeah. Yeah.
And he basically takes him to see a bathysphere,
yeah.
Which is a big giant
it's like a diving bell,
essentially, yeah. Used for deep sea observations. That's really designed to withstand a ton of pressure. He wants to use it for the Venus probe.
Yeah,
to send in.
He's like, it's ancient. And he's like, there is wisdom in years. This is Karloff. He's got a whole plan going on.
I love this submarine guy who's also like, did you find an ocean out there? Is that why you need this thing?
Because the Venus is high pressure
guy.
So he's like, I need something that'll work at high pressure, when we cut from that to Sergei, who's been working on, as we know from previous episode, the Venus project, they've got like a whole like set
team
of equipment now.
Yeah.
That they've built, apparently,
right? They've got a team, they've got a set of equipment, all this stuff. And they have, the only problem is he's doing they're still doing this on the down low, right? This
right.
is still all skunk works. And so he has to smuggle that back into Star City, which because he can't take it in because it's not it's not approved, right?
Right.
They are not supposed to be designing a mission to go to Venus.
Right.
They're supposed to be focusing on landing the base on the moon.
Yeah, I mean, we're leaping ahead a little bit, but that scene where he's at the checkpoint and Ludmilla is like, I'm going to check the thing, and then dogs are barking and it's a distraction. He says, it's fuel tanks. And I'm like, first off, I mean, Korolev, if Korolev is your leak, Ludmilla, like the jig is up. So like, come on.
But it's not about that. It's about control, right?
Yeah, but I also, my thought is just like, if the chief designer says, I went and got a bathysphere because I think it would be a useful thing to have when we're thinking about pressure containment in general, because we're going to space, I don't know if anybody would say a single thing against it, right? So it's like, why is this even secret? You have so much plausibility to just say, look, I was thinking about pressures in space in a bathysphere.
I just picked up a bathysphere.
It is a thing for us to think about. So I got one. And, fine Russian engineering. It felt a little engineered to me this confrontation happened.
But I think what's interesting is supposed to be sort of the push and pull of Ludmilla versus the chief in terms of this, the state versus scientific exploration. Who wields the power here? They're kind of friendly, right? We see the two of them have these interactions where they are friendly, but they are also rivals.
Yeah, he's got absolute control over the space program, except she has absolute control over Star City, right? That's basically what it is. So the state has inscribed in him all of this power, but it's still a totalitarian state, and she still represents the KGB he has absolute power, but is also under absolute control at the same time, and that's the great dichotomy here.
So Volya goes back to Tanya and apologizes for being a jerk.
Yes.
And he tries to put the moves on her and basically pulls Sasha's move, and she gets weirded out because, of course, she was having an affair with him, and she clearly recognizes it.
She's received this move. Yeah.
Yeah, awkward moments
with Arena listening,
on
of course. Cut to
Arena listening.
Listening as he attempts to, as I wrote in my notes, do it Sasha style. So, yeah.
Anastasia awkward. is just at work signing like commemorative cards, like postcards, essentially. Like that's her job, apparently. She's also drinking on the sly. And Sasha comes back, and I kind of really like the relationship between these two, where they're clearly not in love, but they have figured out that this is their place, and they kind of have a rapport.
It's your classic said, like, arranged marriage kind of thing, right, throughout history, where some of those go very badly, but others of them end up being like, they make it work. They find a way to make this, you know, forced relationship, you know, how do we make this work and be civil and navigate our lives? And that seems to be what's going on here.
Right. They've, because he, we learn, among other things, that they will have no helmets and no spacesuits on the mission because they need to fit a third person into a capsule designed for two people.
Yeah, she's aghast by this. She's like, what? Yeah. Are you kidding me? And he's like, yeah, we're not going to do it. I'm sure that won't come up.
Nope, not relevant. But she comments something about, like, you basically, I'm too young to be a widow. I'm too young to get married again or yeah, something. So don't
that's nice,
die.
Because she could also just wish for him to die, in which case, yeah, she could.
Which I don't think so. I think
free,
they
no,
clearly have, again, they've clearly established a certain degree of rapport, even if they are not deeply in love with one another. And we see that in a subsequent scene where the cosmonauts get pulled in by the state apparatchik to basically says, okay, time to write your letters for if you don't make it home. And one guy's like, you already got mine, I'm good. And the other guy is writing a long, deeply felt message. And Sasha is just sitting there like, I'll think of something. And the apparatchik says, very helpful, we can draft a letter, yeah, for you. It will be heartfelt. And
he's like, great, do it.
But patriotic.
Yep, we love it.
And then Sasha does show up.
I love it when the Soviet state comes in and intervenes on the side of the bad husbands to... Like, how helpful. What a useful feature.
You know, it's hard to put it into words. I mean, also, we know that... We know that she, on reading that letter, will be like, what the heck is this?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But it turns out that he does, in fact, write a letter, only he shows up to give it to Tanya and says, essentially, you don't have to read this. I just want you to hold on to it for me. Like, it's more for me than it is, yeah, for you.
She's like, get out. And he slides it under the door.
I guess another Sasha move. The guy's got a lot of moves. They're not all great.
No. No. I like this moment too, where we see, before he shows up, we see Tanya and she's like looking across the woman doing the wash on the other side, and she's doing it on her side, and she puts on the record and makes the mark. And again, we see Irina listening to this, but I like that like moment. And she sort of starts to play it on the piano.
Yeah,
like,
because she's running out of, right. She's running out of plays.
Yeah.
Right. So she's got to sort of pick it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Valya basically comes and suggests that the two of them go on a date, yeah, to Moscow.
Oh, they launched to the moon.
Oh, the mission is launched, so he's not needed anymore.
Right.
And she makes a, I like this bit where he's, you know, she makes a comment about like, oh, they don't need you here. And he's like, oh, I told them I couldn't, like, good thing they didn't send you. He's like, I told them, right, I couldn't go. I've got a date with my wife.
Yeah. Nice moment.
Yeah.
Nice moment.
And so,
oh man.
Yeah. Next up,
oh,
we
man,
learn.
So good. The scene is so
Irina,
great.
Irina's at the market.
Yes.
With her daughter. And she is distracted. Was she looking at something? I forget. She's talking with one of the vendors or whatever. And then her.
Yeah.
Her
and I think it's distracted because she sees Tanya.
She sees Tanya through the, like, a sheet of something, of glass.
Yeah.
And then basically, her daughter is gone, and she basically finds that her daughter has gone up to Tanya, and it turns out that Tanya is her daughter's music teacher.
Yeah.
And Tanya's like, oh, well, she's very talented. Why don't you come over to my house? I'll give her a private lesson. And Irina is like, this is awkward.
Yeah.
Because I can't tell you that I know everything about you.
Yeah.
It's a parasocial relationship, Jason.
Oh, man. The burden of her knowledge, and it's really, like, in the next scene, you know, the next scene where they go over there, like, and she keeps having like flashbacks to the things
because she's heard.
She's never seen this place, but she's heard it all, and she knows all of these things about their lives. This is again a kind of a the lives of others kind of thing, where like she has a panic attack basically because it's so much, and she knows all the secrets that obviously she shouldn't know and she can't say. Yeah. I thought it was pretty great. She also takes some time in the bathroom to smell some Paris perfume.
That's, I think it's the stuff from
Paris.
Paris.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, my husband's Valya. You don't know him? And she's like, no, I don't know anything. Oh, he's a cosmonaut. Oh, that sounds good. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. And she tells her she's in administration, and she has a comment about Tanya says, "Oh, you must be important, or important to somebody who is important."
Huh.
And she says, "Oh, that's a nice way to think about it."
I'm a glorified secretary, and I'm like, "Well, she is in the typing pool. It's what don't ask what she's typing."
Just whatever they make it. And now we have our interesting moment. We learn a little bit about the father of her daughter.
A little bit.
So he's not dead. It seems indicative that they were never married either, I think, is the implication.
Mm.
But we don't really know, because she says something basically, the father of the daughter was not a good man.
Yeah.
And then in the moment that we're going to discuss, the sound drops out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I when I saw this, I assumed that this was a thing, dialogue that was going to be looped, that hadn't been looped, because we are, again, dear listeners, we are watching this on screeners a month in advance of even the premiere of the show. So we're way ahead of time. And we don't know. Sometimes there's a little warning. It's like, audio might not be final. VFX might not be final. This may not be exactly what goes out.
However, and so
I had that moment, and I'm like, this is weird, because this sounds like they just completely... It's not just...
I ran it back a couple times,
yeah,
too.
It's like a dropout with tape hiss. And I'm like, that's weird. Yep. And you can't turn on the subtitles, which might have given away that it is, and you know, inaudible.
Part of it is her mouth isn't moving for part of it, but then it's very clear at one point that they are talking.
Yeah, yeah. And I turned to Lauren at this point, and I was like, okay, is that a mistake, or is that...
A choice.
Is that a choice because she's listening... Because this is being recorded on tape, and then, like, as I say that, we cut to her, she's in the typing pool, and she has the magnet from the fridge magnet of the magnet
from the music, yeah,
and she's demagnetizing what we didn't hear on the tape, so which is really actually a brilliant bit of filmmaking, right? That she's redacted our hearing of her story there.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that too, because the suggestion being like, look, you know, if anybody goes and pulls up this tape, they'll still know I was there.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not like I'm covering up my entire, you know, presence.
Yeah. I mean, she'll transcribe it, right? And say,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was invited over, and this is what we talked about.
But the question, part of the question for me was whether there was something politically sensitive, right?
Yeah.
Was she the mistress of some high-powered individual or something like that?
Yeah.
And she can't implicate him because that would be real bad for her.
Right.
We don't know.
We simply don't know.
That may be a shoe to drop later.
So if it didn't play exactly like that, dear listeners on Apple TV, then sorry.
This is all we know.
This is what we saw. So we assume that this was intentional, and this is how it plays out. And it is very clever, assuming that this is exactly how they did it. So, it's pretty good.
We sort of elided over this, but we kind of mentioned it. So Sergey and the chief, as we said, have a big team. The chief has let Valya in on the whole mission because he needs him to train the cosmonauts they're going
to
send. And as I think he
Venus.
Says at one point, yeah, he's just like, it's one thing if we, you know, somebody who's not going to be missed for a few days. We need somebody who's not going to be missed for 9 months.
Yeah, yeah. Someone with nothing to lose, and it's just left there. Yeah, because Valya sees the bathysphere and he's like, what the hell is this? And they're like, well,
right.
Venus, we need it for Venus. It's like, you're going to send people down to the, like, what? How? Huh? Because, I don't know, this seems bananas to me. They did send equipment down to the surface of Venus that lasted for 5 minutes or whatever. But this is wild. And I looked it up on the For All Mankind wiki.
Is it mentioned?
And there's mention of Russian. I mean, Russians in our world did explore Venus. They're the ones who put a probe down there that lasted for 5 minutes or whatever before it melted or was crushed or whatever bad things happened down there. And I think there's a reference to Russian missions to Venus in passing, but no details. So this is a place where kind of nicely... Star City is able to explore, and we don't really know what's going to happen, right? Like, did they send the first people to Venus? Is this a disaster in the making? We have no idea.
Right. Well, we seem to know that there isn't, like, at least in the future for all mankind, it's not like there seems to be a ton of activity around Venus. So,
well, I mean, that's the truth of Venus, though, right? Like, right. The best in our world that we've ever proposed about Venus is you could send. It's actually a pretty cool idea. I think it's called. Is it called MAVEN? It's a balloon, basically. Like you could set essentially like a hot air balloon in the clouds of Venus, because there is actually a level in the cloud tops of Venus where it's Earth pressure and basically Earth temperature. So you could send people there and then also drop probes and do research from there. You have to figure out how to get a balloon into that position and then how you get people off of it eventually.
Yeah.
And they have to wear some protection because there might be some rain or mist every so often, and it would be sulfuric acid, which would be bad. So you got to work on some stuff. But like, Venus is not a place you would need, completely wild sci-fi technology of like floating platforms to have people be at Venus. So it's not really likely, regardless of what the exploration might be in the early 70s by the Soviets in this timeline.
This may not go very well.
It may not. I am a little concerned about whoever this person is who has nothing to lose, who might go to Venus.
We have a brief photo op with Anastasia is basically serving as the Capcom so that she can get her picture taken talking to her husband, who's, you know, Sasha's off on the moon, and
right.
They're doing all their various stuff and checks and what have you.
I like that the cosmonauts are making fun of him for having his very serious voice when he's speaking.
Oh, yes.
They're like, "Oh, for the motherland, I will."
Fair speech.
They're like giving him a hard time about it. I thought that was pretty funny.
And then we have our For All Mankind moment where the radio signal starts to drop out. However, Sergei notices that there is another signal that is not dropping out when the radio signal drops out. It's a high frequency signal and it's coming from the ship.
Yeah.
And as they identify it, it turns out they've discovered it's a frequency used by the Americans.
Oh, gasp.
Dun, dun, dun.
Our ancient enemies.
There is a transceiver or something, which, you know, the chief loops in Ludmilla. Ludmilla thinks it's sabotage, but the chief just thinks essentially they're trying to steal their technology, reverse engineer something about their processes. So they're trying to figure out how to shut it down. And the only option the chief comes up with is to basically reboot everything on the space shuttle, but that could jeopardize the mission.
Yeah.
So they have them, and she basically is like, "You got to do it.
Got to do it."
So they have them power cycle everything on the capsule, and there's a very tense moment where it's like, is it all going to come back up again? Or are they going to be able to find their landing window? And they apparently do. Everything seems fine.
Seems fine. It's going to be fine.
So they detach their lander, and they're flying off. Unfortunately, something about the power cycle has gone wrong, and the HAB,
the inflatable
tents,
yeah,
have deployed too early.
Yeah.
And are throwing off their attempt to land. So they have to abort the landing. They can't jettison it. It's not working. So they will have to manually fly back to the orbiter. Ha! Now Sasha's sitting there thinking, I could have flown a MiG here.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, part of the problem is it's shaking too much during this because it's all the HAB being extended is throwing everything off. So the other cosmonaut has to go in there and basically slowly depressurize it.
Yeah.
So that it will stabilize, and it seems to be working, and he gets him to increasingly, like, you know, vent it, and he flies back and he successfully docks with the orbiter, and he's like, "We did it, buddy."
There's a great moment where the guy's working in there, and he's like, I'm trying to hold it steady. He's like, I'm working on it. And then there's like a pop, and it's really well done. And there's like a pop, and he's like, "Ah, that did it. We're good now." And I'm thinking, "Yeah, that guy's dead."
Yeah. Indeed.
That guy is dead. That guy's
you
dead.
Know what?
The whole
should've
thing
worn
just
a spacesuit.
Yeah, it should have had a spacesuit. Indeed. Yeah, it's all shredded and torn off, and he's floating out there with the remnants of the HAB, and is a goner.
News.
So we got death and fear in space, a For All Mankind extended universe specialty.
And intercut with Valia and Tanya having a lovely time at the concert.
Piano concert. There's a Senor Wences kind of thing with Jean-Pierre, the napkin puppet.
The little napkin puppets, and they make fun of Oleg, who's the guy that follows them around, basically the KGB guy who follows them
around.
Used
to be a ballerina,
says her
puppet.
I enjoyed that.
And they look up at the moon, which is nice, yeah. right? Like, he looks up at the moon when they're getting out of the taxi.
My buddy's there. One of them's dying as we speak.
Yeah, and Oleg is, like, nodding along at the concert, which is really adorable.
There's a great moment. Yeah, I love that moment. They're listening to the music, and they're having a good time, and they look over at Oleg, and he's, like, bobbing his head. Volya gets up to excuse himself. He's gone for a while.
Yeah.
So Tanya gets up to investigate, and she sees him talking to a woman at the coat check, and he has his hand on her arm. And it seems very, very intimate. And we're thinking, oh, Volya, you seem like such a straight arrow. Are you cheating on your wife who was cheating on you?
Yeah.
And we cut over to their conversation, in which it quickly becomes apparent, no, he is not cheating on his wife. He is betraying his country. Yeah. He is the mole.
He is the mole.
He is the leak. He wants out in the way of moles since time immemorial.
Yeah, he planted the transmitter.
Yeah, he planted that transceiver that caused
everything. And she says, yes, but that broadcast failed, so...
So you are far from done.
Oh, Volya, no.
Volya, no, what have you done? I liked that scene because I think it's done very well, because I thought, you know, we have the whole thing of the mole and the leak floating out there.
Right.
And we haven't really had any great suspects.
No.
It's like the show is, you know, has indicated that the KGB is in the dark about this. And so at that moment, you know, when we see him at the coat check, I, first of all, was confident that this was a misunderstanding, right? In the classic drama trope of, oh, my husband's cheating on me. And it's like, no, it's just something that, like, looked worse than it is. But in fact, it probably looked better than it was. Because he was probably way low on the list of people I would have suspected as being the leak.
Right? And yet, he is. So we're going to have more... spy stuff, more, you know, double cross spy stuff. The fact that they were close. Yeah. They were able to get the transmitter on the spacecraft, right? That's the huge one, right? Like that is an enormous leak that suggests a level of access.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way beyond what the KGB suspected.
It is a great one of those moments. I don't know if there's a good term for this, but it's one of those moments when it happens. It puts everything from earlier in the episode into perspective, because you understand now why he was so stressed in part about everything that's happening, is because he planted a thing on that ship that was going to the moon and he didn't want it to get found. And it was just very stressful. And I'm sure he also, we don't know yet what his reaction will be to the fact that essentially what he did kind of led to somebody dying, like somebody he knew, like, but he's probably not going to feel great about that. And moreover, like, he's got that classic, you know, mole problem, which is, and this is, we saw this with Margot too in For All Mankind. You know, they get you on something, right, and convince you to do it, and then once you've done it,
they just got you.
It's over, right? They got you because you've now betrayed your country, and we know the KGB is not going to be very understand. Oh yes, we know you just did it once. It's fine. We saw what happens. Ludmilla's going to take you out to the shed somewhere and shoot you. It doesn't matter if you're a famous cosmonaut or not. I'm curious to know if we're going to delve a little bit into the backstory of why, you know, what was the impetus for him to do this? Was he blackmailed? Was he promised a better life? Like, you know, what happened to make him make this decision in the first place? I'm kind of intrigued to see if we explore that a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. It's good. I like this show a lot. The space stuff, Cold War stuff, the whole English accent, Chernobyl. I mean, clearly Chernobyl was a touchstone for them, and that is, for people who have not seen it, the HBO miniseries. It's so good, and this is like space Chernobyl, basically. I'm loving it.
Probably would have been safer if Chernobyl had happened in space.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, bad for the people in space, though.
Yeah, well, space is big.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it depends, though. If it's like moon Chernobyl, it could be real bad.
That's not great.
So, this is, I think this is right up my alley, this show.
Yeah. I also want to call out, I thought the between this and I recently, a couple months ago, I watched Ponies on Peacock, which is also a Cold War era spy thriller. And I feel like maybe we've hit another renaissance of like Cold War era stuff, but the filming of this, right, the look and feel of this, and we said that a little bit with the first couple episodes too, but like everything is very grainy. It looks like it's being shot on film. It looks very desaturated, right? It has that very much that, you know, you're behind the Iron Curtain feeling to it. It really evokes the era in which it is set. And I really like that because I feel like the production of this show is really good.
Yeah.
You know, we saw that with For All Mankind. I think in some cases, For All Mankind has struggled a little bit more as it has advanced to the present day because stuff looks a little, you know, especially when you're talking about like, oh, they're on Mars or they're on the moon or something like that. Like their sets, they're built. They've got to kind of imagine a little bit because they're in sort of a science fiction era.
Right.
But when you're doing like historical fiction, right, like there are things to compare it to. There is a baseline there. And I feel like this show looks great.
Mm-hmm.
And like the costumes are good. Like the set dressings are good. All the technical aspects of this show are really solid.
The old cars, the Russian cars, desaturated men in sad functionaries in hats and stuff.
The
apparatchik like, character, who I don't even know what his name is, but like it doesn't matter because he's just an apparatchik. But like he's just a gray man in a gray suit with a gray hat. Like, it, and then you're like, that's exactly how I picture it.
If anything, Korolev is probably like the most stylish looking guy around. I feel.
Oh
like.
Yeah,
I love Sasha and Valya have their like matching. Like, and it kind of evokes the, like, Russian, like, the Soviet Olympians, where they've got that from the 80s, right? They've got those, like, they're almost like sweatsuits that they're wearing in a couple scenes, where it's got, like, the collars on it and everything, and it just looks so 70s. It's great. It really nails the feel of all of this.
Yep. Yeah, it's good stuff. I'm enjoying it. So that's three episodes in. Three episodes done.
All right.
And I guess we'll be back next time with episode 4 because it comes after 3. Mm-hmm. But until then, thanks everybody for listening. I hope you saw and heard what we saw and heard. We don't know, but
let us know if you didn't. I mean, I don't know if I'll go back and rewatch it when it airs, but
you can
I
let
will
us
be
know
interested
if,
to hear
if,
from
if,
you.
If it was different, you could let us know. I just know that we will not respond to your comment on the podcast, because by the time you give us the comment, we will have finished the podcast. So it's weird. We're out of time here, but it's kind of fun to be able to get this stuff done and ready for you in advance. So until next week, Dan, do svidaniya.
Do svidaniya, Jason.